Yeah, well, now it's off.
You're off.
Don't get back.
Jenny, just wanted to check if anybody else wanted taxis booked for after the meeting. So she's got taxis booked for Daryl, Tom, Clem, Liesl, Linda, Anna and Peter. So if anybody does need a taxi, they can let Jenny know, but she also needs to know what terminal at the airport people are going to.
Okay, we can resume our meeting. We're going to talk about disclosures. Christy?
So the next two sessions are regarding two papers from the Disclosure Initiative. The first will be about materiality and the second will be about our Principles of Disclosures project. So we'll lead off with materiality, which I'll present, and then after lunch we'll go on to Principles of Disclosure. So the paper I'm referring to is Agenda Paper 7B, and it's a scoping paper regarding the proposed project on materiality that forms part of this disclosure initiative. This project is in addition to some amendments we're making to IS1, which we hope to expose as an exposure draft in the next couple of weeks. In that amendment or proposed amendment, we're making some amendments to the materiality provisions of IS1 regarding not disclosing information that obscures, or immaterial information which obscures material information, and saying that the concept of materiality applies to the financial statements as a whole, so the notes and the primary financial statements, and also that even if there is a specific requirement in an IFRS, you apply the concept of materiality in IS1 to that concept. But moving back to this paper is a scoping paper, and we'll be bringing it to the board in March to ask them for their views on the scope and to get approval to move ahead with this project. But we wanted to ask you your views so we can feed that into the board's discussion in March. So in the interest of time, I would seek to most probably combine the first three questions, then move on to the topics, and then to approach. So if I look at the first three questions, in that we cover, do we think that the ISB should undertake a project on materiality? We have actually heard different views about that. Some people think that materiality is predominantly a matter of behaviour, and the amendments that we're making in IS1 would be sufficient to at least start changing that behaviour. The staff think we should undertake a project, and we think the objective should be to help preparers, auditors and regulators use judgment when applying that materiality, and hopefully to create a better dialogue between the parties in the financial reporting process. And we think that this project should, or the concept of materiality should, this project should apply to the financial statements as a whole, even though we think there should be some focus on applying it to the notes of financial statements. So those are the broadly the three first questions, and I'd like to open it up to responses to those. Then we'll move on to topics and our approach.
Just for clarification, when you say undertake a project on materiality, you mean being an active project?
It will be.
Your first output would be an exposure draft.
It will depend effectively how what we propose. So it may be additional guidance. It may be education guidance. It will depend on where we get to with the research.
It's this notion of research that. When the notion of research is brought in, it seems that it takes ages before getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. So supporting efforts in that direction, certainly, but having a sense that of urgency would be the recommendation. So
it does delve into a bit about our approach, but we would hope that the research we want to undertake is to understand where materiality is being applied at the moment. So we would be seeking out in case law, in current legislation, or in standards in standards across the world, trying to collate that together before we sort of move on. I don't expect it to be a year's research into what is meant by materiality. That wasn't what we were envisaging. We were expecting to bring something back to the board July or September.
Russ?
So I think the objective of what you're trying to accomplish is appropriate. In the U.S., materiality is a legal question. It has been interpreted by the courts in the U.S. It's not really something within the purview of accounting standard setters. That said, our conceptual framework does make a point, and it uses the term would. Uses the term could versus the Supreme Court ruling uses the term would. So, and you put that in there. I think what you're talking about here is more of a judgment framework and how preparers and auditors should judge what is and is not appropriate. At the FASB, we've done a substantial amount of research, one about a judgment framework, and that a philosophy that was put into the Posen Committee. It was not moved forward by the Securities and Exchange Commission or the PCOB, the ultimate regulators and judges. The other thing we've done is part of our field testing on the disclosure framework, talked about would, if we just said these disclosures need not apply to immaterial items, would that change behavior? And so far, preliminary, we've observed it would not change behavior. And the primary reason around that is because, one is, I think preparers feel the need to be, at least in the U.S., exactly correct. And part of that is because it is in their best interest to protect from a litigation environment to be exactly correct. The other part is in the U.S., and I think other parts of the world has this too, is communication requirements to the audit committee by the auditor if there are observations of past immaterial items. So in essence, by not doing it exactly correct, your boss is being told that you did not do it exactly correct. So what that does is I think it changes the behavior of the standard setter. Rather than writing, thou shall disclose, thou shall do this, we're talking about one should consider. Getting back to in the judgment framework, the standard setter giving more leeway so that it's not so exact, and then telling and educating the constituents how best to describe it. So I agree with the objective of what you're trying to accomplish. I don't think defining materiality is going to lead you specifically to the objective you're trying to accomplish. I think it's a little broader than that. But I applaud your effort in trying to solve this.
Alexander?
Yeah, it's exactly the same the same line. I just would recommend that you put some guidance on how to interact when you face different materiality concepts, as he's saying. I mean, the SEC has its own view about materiality, which is different from other stakeholders. So that's something important. So how to apply IFRS with a given concept of materiality and comply at the same time with other kinds of regulations. So how does it should be addressed?
I agree. I think sometimes when people talk about materiality, they come to it with different perspectives. Yep. And sometimes just getting people to talk it from the same perspective at the same time, I think would be useful, and maybe pulling together the different ways that people could be talking about might enhance people's knowledge and enhance those discussions.
Yeah, because I believe that behind this thing here is this whole discussion about this disclosure problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Footnotes are too lengthy, they do not contain enough information, etc. But it seems that some regulators disagree. They don't think that the footnotes are that lengthy. They keep asking for more disclosures about things that in somebody's view, in my view, for example, are immaterial, but they keep asking for more. So there is a tension here. No.
And we think what we want, ideally, would what we do be able to help not only the preparers, but the auditors and the regulators. And we have do have a working group with representatives of IOSCO and the IAASB, because we want to be able to get something that everybody can buy into or at least support.
Yeah, that's why I believe that our project is well.
Okay. Clement?
Yeah, I think just like Christy said, a lot of our members actually thinks that because of the different perspective that the people might take in looking at materiality, it will be a good, you know, sort of a move
to involve the other sort of stakeholders such as the IWSB, the IOSCO, you know, in looking at materiality. And I think one possible way to deal with it is to provide more sort of guidance on how to apply, you know, this concept, because it's down to, you know, sort of behavioral matters of different groups. So definitely, in general, agreeing with the direction that the Christie has been saying.
Yeah, thank you. We support the IESB's initiative regarding the concept of materiality. But the application of the concept of materiality could differ depending on security laws and the court decision. They vary greatly across different jurisdictions. So it is difficult to find the common principle. And even if you can find the common principle, it may not be feasible to use accounting standards. So our recommendation is not to put too much resources on the research of such a judgment or court decision.
Because you think it will be overridden by security law and et cetera, and rules by enforcers.
It is quite difficult to find the proper answer.
Kevin.
I was very interested in what Russ said, because we've sort of been coming to the same place using slightly different language and thoughts. If you start with the presumption that we've got some complexity, we're going to do something for preparers by having them better understand how materiality works and what they don't have to do. That's almost the logic that we're following. And yet, at the end of the day, the benefit that you give to people through that is minimal in their eyes for the behavioural reasons. It's not that hard to load stuff into the financial statements. It is actually harder to take it out and think about it, exercise judgment, and then you invoke jeopardy with regulators, etc. So we've sort of got to a realisation that no matter what we do as the messenger here, the standard setter, it's only part of the game, and so the holistic approach that you've been talking about, Clement's been talking about, is part of it as well. So we've already been working with the regulators and getting them to make the same sorts of statements that we're making, as if we all have the same view of what materiality means. We don't share the view that it's a court issue. Courts may take a view on it, but that doesn't absolve us from a responsibility of having a concept that we're driving to. And at least in common law, courts will follow accounting standards unless I think they're ridiculous. I won't do it independently. So it's a circle here, not something to take as a given. But, you know, I would support what you're doing. I found it instructive to hear what Russ said last meeting and this meeting about the US, and no doubt there will be other things you'll find out in research as well.
Roger.
I also support what you're doing. I think actually making sure that the definition is absolutely clear to all stakeholders is important. I mean, I think historically accountants have understood materiality, but even the words currently in IFRS can be misinterpreted by some regulators, you know, who uses word may as well. Almost everything could be material or is material. I would say that materiality doesn't just apply to the financial statements, it applies to the whole of the financial report, and preparers have to make lots of materiality judgments in actually the front end of the annual report, the management discussion analysis and various other disclosures. That's not to say I would suggest you widen it, but I think people will tend to use whatever you come up with, actually also thinking about the disclosures in the front end of the report as well.
Anna?
Yes, we also support the project. In fact, we have materiality in our conceptual framework, and also in the European Union directive that was approved in June, materiality was introduced, especially focused in the notes. In the international audit standards in ISAS, where the concept of materiality is regulated, you don't have any guidance. So now we're talking about introducing guidance from the accounting perspective of materiality, but we should bear in mind that in the audit standards there are no guidance. So maybe if we introduce guidance, we should do it in a combined way, or because standards on auditing leave materiality up to the professional judgment of the auditor. So if we introduce guidance, we have to bear that in mind.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, just to say, definitely supportive of the project, and I think just to echo some of the comments already made, certainly need, you know, the audit regulators, you know, other, you know, securities regulators, etc. I think everybody needs to be involved in this. I don't think it should just be, let's say, an ISB initiative, seen as though you've got, the auditors need to apply a concept of materiality. Is that going to be different to the way preparers assess it? Is that not different to the way the regulators assess it? I really think it needs to be a combined effort.
Linda?
Thanks. I just want to add a little bit to the frame from, I guess I'll call it a North American context for us, because generally we're in the same situation in Canada. We do speak about materiality. It is not as rigid in terms of, I think, the approach in the U.S. legally, but the practices with so many of our large registrants being dual listed, in effect, they think about materiality in the same way from a very legal perspective. I think, we're supportive of this. The more I think about this, though, the broader I think that this is a symptom of the whole cycle of financial reporting. And so anything that you can do to start educating and communicating. I know also in our marketplace, one of the big issues relative to trying to remove disclosures has to do with the audit regulators coming back on the audit firms. It would be both PCOB and, in our case, CPAB, which is our regulator. And so I've also never had a comment letter from a securities regulator that says, oh, it's okay, you can take that disclosure out. I mean, when I was a preparer, they always asked for more disclosure. I've never met an analyst who didn't want more disclosure because it made their job easier, et cetera. So it's about educating the whole system, banking regulators also, you know, the whole thing. So I would encourage you to start. I would encourage you, again, I think I said this last time, to be realistic. But someone's got to start the discussion, because what we risk is having financial statements that become completely irrelevant. And, you know, I've had many discussions with stakeholders in our jurisdiction who are saying, well, you know, there's just too much there, I can't get through it all, and things like that. So I think that's important. I think the other thing that affects us from a North American perspective is our certification requirements. And so the CEO and the CFO have to sign a certificate, a legal certificate, that makes them personally liable if there's any flaw with the financial statements. And so that makes them much more interested in making sure that the disclosures are appropriate. So this whole thing works together in terms of people being unwilling to omit anything that might be deemed to be material. So one of the things you may want to consider is whether you just caption this materiality, or you go on to use other words to help you describe the concept that you mean by materiality, to kind of take it away from that legalistic approach.
As you understood with my question, there is obviously support for what you're doing, everything that can be done to improve the situation. But there is also a concern around when will that materialize in practice in terms of improvement in financial reporting. And I noted in your paper that you considered that efforts to clarify the language used, so in fact improving the drafting of the requirements, would be considered after that work on the guidance or education on materiality would have taken place. What is the reason that you would put those things in sequence? And what kind of timeline does this result in?
Is it worth me just opening, going a bit about the approach and then opening up that for a broad discussion answering that? So our view is that we would cover three broad topics. One is trying to get a better understanding across a number of people about what is meant by materiality. So when people talk about it, what do they mean by it? Then also having on that on board, trying to get some clarity around how it's applied. So, or trying to maybe do something to help people apply the concept of materiality. And then thirdly, and to your point, looking at how disclosures are written, because we think sometimes the use of some of the language that we have in IFRS may not assist entities in judging whether something is material or not. And the way we thought we would approach that would be to undertake that research into how the concept is currently applied across jurisdictions. We would hope that we could seek help from standard setters across the world, so yourselves, and we would hope that we would get to be able to ask for that towards the end of April. We want to make sure that whatever we do is succinct and it's hitting the right points. We do need to get approval from the board at the end of the March, so end of April, and we would hope to get maybe turn that around. It depends again on the response from you, but maybe within a month, and then hopefully pull that together and get something to the board again in July, if not September, depending on timeframes. Then so that means that the board will be seeing this again towards the later part of this year. We would then use that as a basis to decide how the board might want to go forward in terms of either looking at some of the language we use, because we think that could contribute to a better discussion about if there's specific language in our standards that need addressing. We also think that it might also inform us whether we do need additional guidance or material or something else, or it may be the point that just getting that far would help the discussions along, and then we could maybe facilitate something with the standards, with the auditors or IOSCO. So I think there's a decision point once we've done that research. In terms of doing something now, in terms of clarity, we felt that significant accounting policies would be something we could start straight away, because we understand from a lot of the research that what we've heard through the discussion forum and survey, that people see that the significant accounting policies note is a home for boilerplate information. And that maybe there is something we could do in terms of clarifying what may or may not be a significant accounting policy. So that's something we could do more immediately without having to wait for some of this research work we're doing. So that was the approach we were going to take, and maybe that sort of opens up, I don't know if that answers your question, Françoise, but it sort of opens up the sort of next sort of body of questions or responses I'd want from ASAP.
We also agree with the project. I think the project is very important, and also agree with the reasons which most of our colleagues have said. One suggestion is that based on this project is really relevant to the preparers, auditors, and regulators. So I think during the project proposing, I think we should bring more input from different stakeholders, such as preparers, auditors, and the regulators. I think different views they will involve in, and they can contribute to the project much more. And once the project is finalized, and it's also easy to be applied in practice.
Roger. Just one specific on interim reporting, which I notice you've got listed. I think actually extra guidance would be useful on interim reporting. I think the technical view tends to be, for example, if you're using profit, say you use 5% of profit as a maturity guideline and 2% of profit, the technical guidance tends to be that you should apply that same rule at the half year, for example. So you've now got, in theory, maturity is half of the maturity to apply at the year end. Now, I think actually most practical people just more or less look at the thing in the round and apply the same level of maturity as they would to year-end financials. Otherwise, going back to yesterday's discussion, you'd have half the level of maturity for leases that you would at the year-end. But I think the technical view differs from the practical view here, and I think it would be nice to get the two on the same page, and I'd endorse the practical view.
I was just going to get on question four, specifically some language you have in paragraph 21 about defining materiality. In the last part about being quantitative, in the U.S., an analysis is generally done from both a quantitative and qualitative nature. And the predominant reason for that is, while it may not be significant or material from a quantitative, it could cause a company to blow its covenants or to meet earnings numbers. And so it's thought of both a quantitative and qualitative. Again, based on a legal philosophy of it would be significant. So if you are in technical violation of a covenant and your debt is called, that would be significant. So I just encourage you to go beyond quantitative. And or consider going beyond quantitative.
And I we definitely feel that we should go beyond the quantitative. I think what I was trying to get across in 21 is that I have been in discussions where we've talked about materiality and people sort of have immediately gone to a percentage of earnings as their sort of thought about what materiality is. So I think it was getting to this perspectives idea that some people naturally revert to that when discussing materiality.
The other observation, and I don't know if this is outside this, but in the U.S. a lot of times an audit approach and how much auditing work one will do for their sampling is directly dependent upon how an auditor finds materiality. How an auditor finds materiality for their internal auditing process is really not the same as what's material to the financial statement. So that is predominantly on a quantitative basis. It has to do with statistical sampling that Tomo, I'm sure, would be able to explain. Right?
But he doesn't have to do so.
Just a question, Christy. When you go out and try and find out how people are doing it, I know you're familiar with the fact that there's a great string of terms in IFRS that are sort of like materiality, mm-hmm. significant et al. Mm-hmm. And at one stage there was a spreadsheet humorously going around the traps. I think they got to something like 140 terms of familiarity that was something like materiality. So how are you going to control for that when you go out and ask people?
What we wanted to do in terms of going out to ask people was not to sort of say, how are you applying materiality? What we want to do is to ask, where is it currently being addressed? So in various regulators have put out guidance, case law has referred to it, local standards refer to it, maybe even legislation might do that. So it was not trying to say, how are you applying it currently to individual people, it was more to collect the information that's already been prepared and bringing that in and trying to assess that. But I take your point about the use of different language, and I think that's something we do need to address. We've been, you know, significant accounting policy is an example of that. How is a significant accounting policy different from a material accounting policy? So I think we're conscious that we do need to, either within this project or more broadly, look at that language and make some sort of, at least see where it is. That spreadsheet sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, get that together and make sure that we get a holistic view before we then start to sort of make a decision how to address each of that different language. Because sometimes we're not sure whether there is meant to be a difference between something that's material or not. If there isn't, then I think, you know, sort of my preference would be to have the same language, but without knowing whether there is meant to be a difference, it's hard to move forward.
It might just be useful in those sort of some control questions to say to people, do you read the following as meaning materiality, and give them four or five examples to see what happens when you ask that question.
It's a question. Do you think we should go more broadly than trying to ask for how materiality is currently applied in case law or legislation or current accounting standards? Would your view or people's view be that it should be broader? I mean, that I think would extend the time that we would need to undertake for such.
I'd just be worried if people do read something different into the different terms, that they'll answer you literally on materiality and you won't pick up what else they're thinking.
Liesl?
Well, I would be inclined to, first of all, extend it to, I now use the different word, significant and non-significant, because it's just the other way around, and where you use these words, and then I would extend it to do think of other languages and our problems, and you might have 10 words, to cut it down a little, in English, and you might have 12 in French and 15 in German or something like that. And we want, it's where I said, usually say, standard setting is not about the literature Nobel Prize winning or whatever. It's meant to be a cookbook to a certain extent, so that if it says material in English, it doesn't say non-significant in German or something like that. We need to be on the same hymn sheet somehow. And I guess the mirror image and all different languages beg the question too.
Okay.
Nobody else has got any more questions? Just in terms of my feedback from this, I think there's actually very good support around the table for going ahead with this project, but also that we need to combine our efforts with other stakeholders, so regulators and auditors, to continue that. We need to be conscious of some of the legal restrictions or regulatory restrictions in some of the jurisdictions around the world. But I think I get the impression that someone has to start the discussion, and it's maybe good for us to do that. So thank you. That's what I take away.
Right. Yep. May I add as a takeaway that maybe you, and with the board, you see when you expect that this is going to bring, in terms of when, what year, you think that these efforts are going to materialize in practice?
Okay. I will.
Because that's a sense of in your action that you need to have. When will these efforts bring effective outcome?
I think you'll actually find that even with the amendments we're proposing for IS1 that are currently in ballot draft, we're proposing to take out the words at a minimum out of one of the lists that we've got there, for example. And so we've actually got some of the thinking that's gone into assessments is already feeding through into that stand as well. And when you say, you know, when is it delivered, I suspect that we're going to deliver multiple things, because there's the issue that Russ raises about the way you draft the disclosure requirements. And we've, as well as making sure the language is less prescriptive, we've talked about the idea of having considered the following types of items with deliberate overlaps. You can't have a checklist if you've got overlapping disclosure requirements, because they pick one. But and the idea is to be indicative, for example. And the other thing I think too is, and I like the words that Kevin used. He said he found some of the discussion instructive. I think we've all found it instructive reading the Supreme Court cases in the US and finding out what the way others have applied materiality. And I think getting that and much more awareness will get the debate going. So it's unclear to me whether we'll end up with amending the definition, adding lots of guidance, or whether this is going to be two or three threads. Some will find themselves very quickly in the way we actually write disclosure requirements. And the example Christy used about accounting policies, to me that's about, it's hard to work out what's material if you're not quite sure what's relevant. And materiality is entity-specific relevance, right?
Sure.
So if you haven't got a very clear disclosure requirement, and we don't actually explain to anybody in IS1 what a significant accounting policy is, we just say disclose the significant ones. So that's why we sort of toyed with the idea of saying, well, maybe significant means big difference between cash and accruals. That's one way of thinking about it. Or just big numbers, or lots of estimation required. If those things actually make it relevant to why it's important, then you can take materiality and put it over the top. But if you've got two lots of lack of clarity about relevance in the first place, and then plus then, you know, some idea of what materiality is, it makes it really difficult. And we can address the relevant stuff quite quickly within the standard setting. So that's why I think you'll see several threads come out of it.
All right. I think we're ready for some lunch. And we resume our meeting to continue to talk about disclosures at 12:30.